Welcome to the infamous podcast, Bitch, I'm Not Well. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Brandy.
And we're invested on taking you down to Crazy Town, where we talk about crazy bitches who are truly unwell.
Okay, so with our Bitch, I'm Back comeback.
Hi.
We thought we would bring you the story of Luca Magnotta. He was a cat killer and a murderer.
I hate him.
I hate him already. So you may have heard about this guy on Netflix. He was the center of attention on Don't F*** with Cats.
Do enjoy that name.
Yes. I did as well. So that's why I watched it.
Excellent.
Because I was like, what happens if you F*** with cats? I don't know.
All kind of ill shit.
Bad shit happens, okay? So this Netflix docuseries released in December 2019, where a team of internet sleuths played a huge role that led to the capture and conviction of Luca Magnotta in 2012.
Good job, guys.
Good job, internet sleuths.
I like my armchair detectives.
Yes. Armchair. I don't know if they had armchair.
No, armchair.
Armchair. Ah! Armchair detective.
Armchair detective.
Now I gotcha.
Orange hair. It does sound like orange hair.
God, that's so. So Eric Clinton Kirk Newman, aka Luca Rocco Magnotta.
It's a mouthful.
Isn't it? His real name is a mouthful. That's like four names.
Yeah.
He was born in July 24th, 1982, in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. Eric's parents were Annie Yorkin and Donald Newman, and they were very young parents. Donald was 17 and Anna was only 16.
Oh, shoot. That is young. Mm-hmm.
Very young. They had three kids in total. So they had Eric, and then less than a year later, they had his brother, and then they had a girl a few years later. So three kids, and she was probably 19.
Oh,
by
dang.
The time she had all three, maybe 20. Donald describes Anna as being a germaphobe, obsessed with cleanliness, and that she would often lock the kids out of the house because she didn't want the dirt inside, inside, you know, their dirty little hands or whatever.
Don't touch anything.
Yeah. And she wouldn't let them use public washrooms, which is, I think, partly why she wanted to homeschool them, which she did, despite not having finished high school herself.
Hmm.
So that was something.
That's interesting.
Yep. Whenever they would come in from outside, they would have to wash their hands until their skin was raw.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm never coming inside.
Mm-hmm.
My hands hurt.
Yeah, I just keep my hands really clean, I think.
Just keep them in your pocket.
Yes.
I'm sterile.
Right?
That's what it says.
That would have made more sense than making them scrub their skin off.
Yeah.
She was such a germaphobe that she wouldn't even let them put their pet rabbit inside during the winter. And
oh,
it froze
no,
to death.
It's cold in Canada.
It is very cold.
Mm-hmm. Poor baby rabbit.
Tucka. Tucka. Eric's dad, Donald, also says that both boys were mixed up kids, and Eric was not a normal child.
Huh.
But he just chalked it up to like being isolated and having no contact with kids his age, you know, so.
Yeah, my kid's weird.
My kid's a weirdo.
I knew this, and I still sent him out in public. Let's go.
Do your best.
Don't kill cats.
So, in addition to that, like them being isolated and, you know, not having any friends their age or whatever, and their pet rabbit freezing to death outside and having to scrub their hands clean until their skin fell off.
Yeah, there's not really anything normal about that childhood.
No, both parents were alcoholics on top of that.
Oh, okay.
And his father, Donald, was diagnosed with schizophrenia.
Do you think his mom started drinking while she was homeschooling them?
Vodka and the Kool-Aid.
Yep. If I mix seven bottles of vodka with two packets of Kool-Aid, will I be drunk?
Well, Was that the science class or the or the math class or a combination?
That'd be a combination.
Combination of both.
Yeah, we're going to do a project in class today. It's going to be a hands-on experiment. If I have a bottle that holds 17 shots and I drink 10 of those shots, when will you need to go and get your ass on the road to get me another bottle of alcohol?
Pretty soon, I imagine.
I'm going to start walking right now, Mom. I don't have my driver's license. Get on my tricycle.
Like they could get it. It's from my mama.
I just picture a kid coming on a tricycle, like spinning in the parking
Mom
lot.
Mom needs vodka.
Hey, Al, I'm here to get Mom's vodka. I need the Taka. I need the plastic bottle. I'm not old enough to carry glass.
The plastic. Oh, my God. It's the safer choice. Oh, gosh. Can you hear Tucker? So, guys, it's a beautiful day today, and we're sitting outside on the back porch, and that's how we're recording our session today.
Yeah,
so if you hear Tucker barking,
it's his fault.
It's his fault.
Just
ignore him. He's hearing gravel pop in the driveway or something. I don't know.
He just wants to be part of the podcast.
He just has to belong. So, eventually, Mom and Dad divorced after Dad was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and
sure, the alcohol didn't help with the schizophrenia.
It probably did not. Probably didn't. But Anna and Eric and his siblings moved in with Anna's mother, Phyllis. And Eric was only 12 at that time.
And he's the oldest.
He is the oldest, okay. Yes. After moving back to Toronto, the kids started public school. That's a plus.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like from being isolated, now they had friends.
That had to be like a huge culture shock.
It had to be. And sadly, on top of the culture shock that they had, Eric was in the sixth grade and almost daily bullied and beat up at school for being weird or gay.
Poor thing. You're lucky I don't know anything about your later life, because I wouldn't say poor thing if I knew what you did to those cats.
Well, as a kid, that's sad.
That is sad. I wonder if back then they did like the testing to see what grade you went into. Or if it's like you're 12, so you have to be in sixth grade.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. So because he was like bullied and beat up and all that, he would retreat mentally and imagine himself having like a special kinship with Marilyn Monroe. That was who he idolized.
I love her.
I know. So beautiful.
She really was.
His psychiatrist wrote that when he was younger, he felt quite ugly. And when imagining himself being beautiful like her, it made him feel better.
Oh, poor baby.
I know.
I'm sure that didn't go over well when he was that age. I'm sure that wasn't accepted him.
Well, in the sixth grade at public school.
Yeah. And it's in the probably the early 90s.
Yeah, 90s.
Mid-90s.
When Eric was around 18, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia also.
Oh.
And placed on Paxil and Ativan. When he was 21, he was actually hospitalized for hearing voices. After he got that mental diagnosis, he was able to collect disability. But I suppose this wasn't enough for him.
And he's 21 at this point?
Yeah. So he supplemented his income by working as a male escort and stripper.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. In 2003, at 21 years old, Eric began appearing in gay porn videos. He also befriended a 21-year-old mentally challenged woman whose mental age was between 8 and 12 years old.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. He also assaulted her sexually while videoing the incident.
What the hell?
He convinced her to apply for a credit card and left her in debt over $10,000.
Well, you're just scum, aren't you?
Well, he is. We already know he is. Now, I mean,
I don't know why I always think that the person we're talking about here is going to be like a good person victory. Like,
I know. Yeah, it never happens.
No, it doesn't. Like, we wouldn't be talking about him if it did.
Right? Sorry. We're in the wrong business.
Yeah. Dang.
We could make another podcast called Bitch, I Am Well.
I am well. Look what I can do.
Bitch, I'm doing good.
I like that one.
Yeah, we could do that. No one would be so depressed all the time with these stories. And just have it about people who excelled.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You did great at life.
It's like yin and yang. Bitch, I'm unwell. Bitch, I'm doing good.
Hey, guys. Hey.
All right. New podcast coming out. Bitch,
yes.
I'm doing good.
Yes, we are.
We will get our shit together one day.
We will.
You'll see.
I have faith in us.
Okay. In 2004, Eric was charged with fraud and sexual harassment. While the late, and this is because of the mentally challenged girl.
Okay.
Because he befrauded her. Befrauded? Defrauded?
Defrauded? Frauded? I don't know.
He frauded on
her. He frauded on her.
Yes. And I don't know why it wasn't sexual assault.
Yeah.
It was just sexual harassment, which they dropped.
Wonder why. I mean, I guess they couldn't prove it.
Maybe not. Like, I don't
know. He said, she said, but.
But how would they even know that
he
did?
Somebody had to turn his ass in.
So the sexual harassment was even dropped. And during the trial, his lawyer showed the court his medical report revealing that he had significant psychiatric issues. Well, what about his poor victim?
Y'all could
guess
have
that
put
just
a
didn't
stop
matter
to what he was going to do. And instead, you're like, oh, no, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. It's fine. Everything is fine.
Everything is fine. Go on. Live your
so
life.
So he pleaded guilty, which led to a slap on the wrist judgment of a nine-month conditional sentence and a 12-month probation. Wowzers. Better learn from that lesson.
Yeah, definitely never going to do that again.
Yeah.
Not going to get caught next time.
In 2005, he appeared as a pinup model in the Fab Boy page of Fab Magazine, a gay bi-weekly periodical from Toronto, using the pseudonym Jimmy.
Wow. That's
Eric is now Jimmy.
That's real inventive.
I know.
He's so unique.
He described himself as Russia-born and hoped to become a homicide police officer one day.
Uh-huh. I wonder if he laughed while he was filling this out.
I am Jimmy the Russian-born.
I am centerfold.
I am centerfold and hope to become murder police. Obviously, he didn't make it there.
Kind of went the opposite way with that one.
In 2006, Eric Clinton Kirk Newman changed his name to Luca Rocco Magnata. You got to do that while you hold your fingertips like an Italian.
Like an Italian.
Yeah, Italiano. Luca wanted to erase the bad memories and reinvent himself, essentially erasing Eric Newman.
Wonder how many Italians have a French accent.
They don't know. Probably none.
Probably none.
He wanted to feel more Italian and less white trashy. And that was his words, not mine.
It's a goal. That's life goals.
Yeah. He continued to appear in various pornographic films.
Making his way up. Okay.
And working as an escort and went by several aliases. Vladimir Romanov.
Oh, my God.
Mattia Del Santo, Jimmy, Justin, Angel, and Kirk Trammell.
I really like Vladimir. Mm-hmm. He should have just gone with that.
Currently, Luca declares to be transgender and goes by the name Violet. Many times he's tried to change
his identity.
Identity or
I would get confused. Who am I today?
He tried to reinvent himself into many different names, I guess.
Yeah. I think he would be the villain on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Probably. Soon he began leading a virtual life, setting up dozens of usernames, maintaining 70 Facebook pages,
cool,
as well as 20 websites and discussion forums in which he used to sing his own praises. He planted rumors about himself. He purported to be a successful model and a prominent porn star in an effort to attract attention. We don't even have time to record a podcast in 6 months.
Yeah.
And this dude is over there dealing with 70 Facebook pages and 20 websites.
Oh, my God.
Keyboard warrior.
20 hours a day.
20 hours a day.
It's a lot of work to do.
Maybe he was just tired.
I wonder if he has a lot of free time now. He could do our Facebook page.
Oh, my God.
Just joking,
remember,
Vladimir.
Remember, he's a cat killer.
Yeah, Vladimir, okay. We're not friends anymore. Sorry, yeah, you can't play with us.
We don't even want you looking at our website.
Nope.
He went so far as to plant a rumor that he was in a relationship with Carla Homolka.
Who's
I remember
that?
When I did that podcast. It was about the Ken and Barbie killers.
Yes.
Yes. She was a high-profile Canadian convicted murderer. So we did cover that. It's Carla Homolka. And it's called The Ken and Barbie Killers.
And they had been convicted already, huh?
Oh, yeah. They were in jail, yeah.
Yeah, that's... Go mm-hmm. from idolizing Marilyn Monroe to bitch Barbie over there.
Right? What the hell? Obviously, this planted rumor worked for him, resulting in an interview in 2007 with the Toronto Sun.
I bet Ken was pissed.
Yeah. Luca denied having any relationship with Carla Homolka. Because, I mean, like, he started this rumor just to gain attention. And he was like, oh, no. I never dated Carla.
They're probably like, who the fuck are you?
Uh-huh. He doesn't even know. The reporter for the Toronto Sun later said that he had found him troubled. And that he suspected at the time Luca made up the rumors to gain attention, which he did.
Yep.
And it appeared that Luca considered Carla Homolka and her accomplice, Paul Bernardo, as role models instead of the murderous deviants that they were.
Huh.
Yeah. So like you said, he went from idolizing Marilyn Monroe to Carla and Paul as being his role models.
Luca, there was no other female role models you could have looked for.
There's plenty.
There's plenty that are not doing life.
By March 2007, Luca was in debt around $17,000 and filed bankruptcy, listing illness, lack of employment, and insufficient income to pay off debts as a cause.
Did he put on there that he was real busy with Facebook and didn't have time to get a job?
No, he did not.
This is my job.
He did not. But I'm thinking, why would you claim bankruptcy on only 17 grand?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
It seems like such a small... I was going to say that you would ruin your name and your credit, but okay, let's be honest. The guy's in jail.
Yeah, he didn't
and
really...
And he's a murderer, so...
I wonder if credit...
I guess he really wasn't concerned about his credit history.
Score, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you had a better credit score, we'd give you a better jail cell, but...
Yeah,
you're
you
a murderer and your score sucks, so.
Mm-mm. You could be in the penthouse for if you had an 803 credit.
Yeah, but we're going to have to put you with the cannibal down there.
You got a 102, bud.
Good luck.
You got a zero.
You got a zero.
You're going in the basement.
You ain't ever seen the light of day again.
Mm-mm. So that was in March of 2007. Later in 2007, he auditioned for a Canadian reality TV show called Cover Guy. I don't even know if that's the real like tune theme for it. But
it seems like it would be.
Cover Guy.
Cover Guy.
He proudly posed topless, which, I mean, I guess if a guy's posing without a shirt, wouldn't you just say he posed without a shirt?
Yeah.
But it was mentioned that he posed topless.
Did he have fake boobies?
No.
No?
No, he had both. He had just two nipples.
The
no,
next time.
No titties.
The next time Chris takes off a shirt, I'm like, oh my God, you're topless. What?
Yes. It's a topless bedroom.
Topless bedroom. Hang on. Let me get there too.
Yeah. While we're at it. He was proudly posing shirtless and declaring, a lot of people tell me I'm really devastatingly good looking.
I think he added on the good looking part. They're probably like, you're really devastating.
You're devastating. Yeah. He was seemingly unfazed when the judges criticized him for being too skinny for the modeling competition.
Huh. Was this so, like America's Next Top Model type thing?
Listen.
Luca Magnotta is my last name. Magnotta.
Hey, Luca. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. So thank right you. Away, you know this is another underwear competition. Has to disrobe and cut the shirt right away.
So now he's taking his shirt off.
Take it off.
Put it on.
I have a very deep voice.
Put it back on.
A lot of people tell me that, actually.
I have a very deep voice.
But why get my voice so deep? Practice makes perfect, right?
Practice makes perfect.
I guess you're right.
Tell me that, like, they remind me of, like, 54, that movie, you know?
Oh, Luca, you're making me cringe. Yeah. I've got secondhand cringe.
I used to be really overweight, to be honest. I used to be really overweight, and I lost, like, weight.
I feel like you're a liar.
Oh, I just, like, got up every morning at, like, 4 o'clock and, like, ran constantly. And
yeah, so
He kind of reminds me of like those Valley Girl voices that they used to do in the 90s. Like, like I would get up and like run.
I would just like do it until I was sweating balls.
Devastating.
In 2008, in February, Luca auditioned for Plastic Makes Perfect, a Slice Network documentary series about people who undergo drastic plastic surgery. In his 22-minute audition tape, he admitted to being a cosmetic surgery addict. Having had surgery on his eyes, nose, he had two hair transplants. He also included that he wanted muscle implants in his arms. And he stated that his values were, number one, looks, and number two, willing to work every single hour to get these surgeries done.
But you filed bankruptcy. You didn't
work.
Life goals.
I wonder if that's how he went bankrupt, like $17,000 in debt because of surgeries.
That's some cheap surgeries if he got all that. I want the discounts. I do not want full
price. I would like a
discount. A discount. Didn't he say, did he get muscle implants or he just wanted them?
He wanted them. Okay. So Luca failed to make it in the modeling world, which led to a more sadistically toxic claim to fame. Flaunting his savagery on social media platforms and evading the law, his name would become known as a cat killer, a murderer, a necrophite, and a cannibal.
What is a necrophite?
A necrophite is a person who has sex with a dead human.
Why do they even have a name for that?
Because people are sick. In October 2009, he accompanied a 70-year-old man on a tour of Russia, Italy, and France. Soon after that, his online postings became increasingly darker. In 2010, in the fall, he posted a link to a video on one of his Facebook pages showing a man being viciously beaten to death.
Oh my God.
Right? Just before Christmas 2010, he posted another gruesome video that spread like wildfire. This video was titled One Boy, Two Kittens. And here we go.
Oh no!
Strap in. I saw your eyes get big. It's happening. It's happening!
It's happening! I don't like it.
In this video, Luca's hand is seen petting two kittens that look to be around 6 weeks old. So This Is Christmas by John Lennon is playing in the background. You know that song?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so this is Christmas. You know that?
Yeah.
It's kind of eerie. The video cuts to a wider frame of Luca's bed covered with a wolf blanket. Luca enters the scene wearing a dark hoodie, holding a kitten in each hand, and a cigarette dangling from his lips. He places each kitten in a clear vacuum travel bag. He changes the angle of the camera to view more of the bag, and one of the kittens tries to walk out of the bag. He gently pushes it back in, ziplocks the bag closed, attached a vacuum hose, and turned it on, sucking the life out of the two kittens. Yeah. This outraged animal and cat lovers all over the world, and before long, a Facebook group called Find the Vacuum Kitten Killer for Great Justice was evolved.
I want to go meet him in prison and f*** the world up.
Right? I just want to suck the life out of his cell.
Suck the life. I'm going to make it slow and painful, though.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to bring Mr. and Mrs. Sausage, the cats, with me. And Meow Schools.
You better hide them.
This.
Rescue Inc., an animal protection group, posted a $5,000 reward for any information leading to the arrest of the vacuum kitten killer. At this point, Luca began a cat and mouse game with the group. Sorry.
What? Couldn't help myself.
Always staying one step ahead. He later published a second video, this time drowning a cat in a bathtub.
Oh my God.
A third video showed him feeding a cat to a python.
Oh my God.
In January 2011, the Facebook group identified Luca Magnotta as the person in these videos and reported him to authorities, warning that after committing these acts of animal cruelty, he might pose a threat to humans, which they were absolutely correct.
Was anything done?
No. No.
So these people did your job for you, officers.
Right.
And then you just ignored them?
Yeah.
Okay. This, all his murders were on you.
Mm-hmm. So their investigation was later chronicled in the 2019 true crime docuseries Don't Fuck With Cats, Hunting an Internet Killer. And that was on the Netflix that I talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
In February 2011, Toronto police began investigating Luca Magnotta in connection with the videos after receiving a complaint from the Ontario Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. The OSPCA also contacted the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals in Britain.
Ooh.
The American FBI and police in Montreal due to the suspect's extensive travels.
Oh, I was wondering why he had all those, they had all the different places.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. On May 15th and 16th, 2012, Luca posted that there would be a new video coming soon named One Lunatic, One Ice Pick.
Oh, God.
Now, where does your mind take you?
Well, kind of brings me to that guy that you did an episode on that cut his own wee-wee off.
Oh, yeah. The eunuch maker.
The eunuch maker. Yeah, him. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they were friends.
That'd be kind of hard to do with an ice pick, but...
Oh, no, I was just thinking, like, mutilating himself someone else with an ice pick.
I wish it would have been himself, but it wasn't.
Ugh.
So let's talk about Jun Lin. Jun Lin, a 33-year-old international undergrad student from Wuhan, China, moved to Montreal in 2010 to study engineering and computer science at Concordia University.
I like that name.
I know. Isn't it pretty?
It is pretty.
Jun Lin.
Jun Lin.
Lin was described as a positive, genuine, reliable, reserved, and shy. And he was also gay, which did not conform to the beliefs of his home country in China.
Oh, yeah.
His family did not know that he was gay and pressured him to marry a woman that ultimately ended in divorce. Jun Lin moved to Canada because of the country's reputation as a more liberal and accepting place. So here, Jun Lin was free to be who he wanted to be. He was a hard worker, juggling school and working part-time as a cashier at a local corner store. He began a relationship with a man, but that relationship ended a few weeks prior to his demise. Lin's father described him as brave, smart, laughing, caring, adventurous, handsome, strong. He said that it was Jun Lin's dream to own a business in Canada. Jun Lin's father does not want the world to remember his son as the victim of a murderer, and the thought of that saddens him and deeply hurts him every day. And Mr. Lin, we do not think of your son as a victim or weak. We think of your son showing trust and believing that most humans are decent and kind. Because of his genuine heart, he was deceived by a hideous, devious monster who will spend eternity rotting in hell. After the breakup between Lin and his boyfriend, Lin answered an ad on Craigslist, and this is where he met Luca Magnotta. The last images showing Jun Lin alive were taken by a surveillance camera on the night of May 24th, 2012. It shows Lin and Luca entering the apartment building where Luca lived. On May 25th, 2012, an 11-minute video titled One Lunatic, One Ice Pick was uploaded to bestgore.com.
The fuck?
The song True Faith by New Order was playing in the background. A poster for the 1942 film Casablanca is visible on the wall, and Luca is in his same dark hoodie straddling a naked man tied to the bed frame. Luca then began stabbing this man repeatedly with what appeared to be an ice pick and a kitchen knife.
God.
A knife and fork was then used to cut pieces of the flesh and fed to a dog in the room.
Oh my gosh.
There is a more extensive copy of this video, and it says that cannibalism may have been performed.
Oh.
So that has not been released to the public, but it led me to believe that not only is he feeding the dog these pieces, but he ate some of the pieces as well.
Oh my gosh.
Luca then begins to dismember the body and performs acts of necrophilia using a severed arm to masturbate.
Ugh.
Luca is seen leaving his apartment and entering back holding a shopping bag. It was later established that the video did not show the actual killing and that the man whose throat had been slit was already dead when it was shot. The first seconds of the video showed a naked and bound man writhing, but it was not the person being stabbed and slaughtered. The first man in the video was filmed on a different date and had not been murdered. So it was so confusing.
That is confusing.
But yeah, so he had already played this out with another man, you know, like.
But he didn't kill him.
But he didn't kill this guy. Don't know what happened. Maybe the guy fought him off and escaped.
Maybe so.
And yeah, so Who knows? If you thought the Barbie and Ken murders were horrific, in comes Luca and says, hold my beer.
I got this.
Watch and learn.
Yeah, those bitches were crazy. He just like tops it.
Yeah. Luca packaged the body parts and sent them to Canadian government bodies and schools.
What?
Along with handwritten sticky notes that said Stephen Harper and Lauren Teske. This was the 22nd prime minister and his wife.
Huh.
Stephen Harper and Lauren Teske will know who this is. They fucked up big time. And he drew like a little colored heart on the sticky notes. Another note said, you need to speak to Lauren Teske and her family. Lots to hide.
What's he talking about?
We don't even know. We don't even know.
You're just like making shit
this
up?
This is like maybe part of his schizophrenia. Like hearing voices maybe. I don't know. All right.
That's several, just like random.
Yeah, very random. Several hours after the killing, Luca Magnotta booked a round-trip ticket for a flight from Montreal to Paris using a passport with his own name.
The forename name, or was it actually?
His Luca Magnotta name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Facebook group went absolutely apeshit after someone in the group posted the link to the video. They were even more on the hunt to find this piece of garbage. Like, they were on it. They began looking over every second of each video, looking at the surroundings, out the windows, everything that the camera could catch when it was panning around.
Mm-hmm.
They even searched like where the wolf blanket could have been purchased.
Oh, that's pretty good.
The movie poster. From the windows to the walls. Just kidding.
We looked everywhere.
They did. Yeah. So, and this is kind of how they were determined. Like, they saw a building in the background of a window, and they were like, this is where he's at. I know where that place is. It's like a college or something somewhere.
Huh.
Yeah. So on May 26, 2012, an attorney from Montana, USA, attempted to report the video to Toronto police, the local Montana sheriff, and the FBI, but the report was dismissed by officials.
Why?
I don't know. Best Gore viewers were also attempting to report the video, like, even on Best Gore, they were like, what? This is... Police later confirmed it as authentic and identified the victim as an Asian male, as the same individual whose body parts were sent to Ottawa.
Oh, so now you believe it.
Yeah, now you believe it. Three of Jeanlin's friends, who hadn't heard from him since May 24th, 9 p.m., went to his apartment on May 27th. He didn't report to work either, which was odd. Maybe they thought he had gone home. I'm not sure why or if they tried to report him missing, but he wasn't reported until May 29th.
I was listening to a different podcast the other day, and, you know, normally you hear people say, you know, you have to wait 24, 48 hours to report somebody missing.
Yeah.
There's a 31-year-old man that went missing around that time, and they made them wait a week before they could report him missing. Yeah. I've never heard of them making him wait that long.
What? Was he found?
No, he's still missing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's insane. Okay, the same day at 11 a.m., a package containing a left foot was delivered to the national headquarters of the Conservative Party of Canada. The package was stained with blood, had a foul smell, and was marked with a red heart symbol. A note was in the packaging stating six body parts had been distributed and that the perpetrator would kill again.
So they delivered a blood-stained package.
Yeah. Yeah, huh. They delivered it. I mean, rain nor sleet nor hail.
Yeah, I guess you're dedicated.
You're getting that package.
Hope you had your gloves on.
Oh. Another package containing a left hand was intercepted in a Canada post-processing facility addressed to the Liberal Party. So, yes.
So, somebody did their job
somebody
there.
Somebody did their job there. They were like, oh, this cannot go out like this.
No.
My goodness. It's going to stain the truck.
Smell. I'm never going to be able to get the smell out.
Ugh. A janitor discovered a decomposing torso inside a suitcase in a garbage pile in the alley behind an apartment building in the Snowden area of Montreal. He first saw the suitcase on May 25th, but it was not picked up due to the large amount of garbage that day. After searching the scene, police recovered human remains, bloody clothes, and papers identifying the suspect, as well as sharp and blunt objects from the back alley. Footage from surveillance cameras inside the building showed a suspect bringing numerous garbage bags outside, and the images matched the suspect, who was captured on the video at the post office, like dropping it off. So they caught Luca. You know, they did an identity match or whatever, visual. Yeah. And the person that was bringing out all the garbage bags was the same person that dropped the package off at the post office. Mm-hmm.
I wonder why he got a round trip ticket.
I don't know. Like, you're really coming back?
Like, you'd think you made it out, so why would you come back?
Well, I would think that you have no intention of coming back, but if you buy a one-way ticket, it's probably more suspicious.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that.
But if you buy a round trip, you're like, oh, he's coming right back.
Yeah, okay. Vacation.
Yeah. At 11:33 p.m., police searched the apartment Luca Magnotta was renting on DeCary Boulevard. Luca had moved in 4 months prior, and his rent was paid up through June 1st. The apartment had been mostly emptied before he left. Blood was found on different items, including the mattress, the refrigerator, the table, and the bathtub. Inside of a closet, a note was written in red ink. If you don't like the reflection, don't look in the mirror. I don't care.
So, don't ask. It's like so deep.
I don't even know.
So deep.
So deep, right? If you don't like the reflection, just change your name.
Yeah, do
it. Changes everything.
Your whole outlook on life.
On May 30th, 2012, it was confirmed that the body parts did belong to the same individual, and the suspect in the case was quickly identified as Luca Magnotta, who had been long gone by then.
Hmm.
Yeah, because he killed him on May 24th, so 6 days later.
Yeah.
On May 31st, 2012, Interpol issued a red notice for Luca Magnotta at the request of Canadian police. Luca's name and photo appeared for several days before and after his arrest prominently at the top of the homepage of the Interpol website.
Hmm.
That's when you know you made it.
Yeah. You made it, boo. You recover.
The red notice requested that Magnotta be provisionally arrested pending extradition back to Canada by any Interpol member state.
You think they used his topless picture?
I hope they did.
Gosh, me too.
It's topless. By the time this red notice was issued, though, like I said, he'd been out of there for quite a hot minute.
Like, peace.
Yeah, peace out, motherfucker. So I'm out of here. The police were able to trace a cell phone signal to a hotel in Bagnolet, Paris.
Hmm. Oh, Paris.
But he was already gone before the police had arrived, and the only evidence found in his room were pornographic magazines and an airsick bag.
Huh. Seems like a cool combination.
Right. Maybe he wasn't using that bag to puke in.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't thinking about that. Yeah.
Gross. So to check into the hotel, Luca used a false passport with the name Kurt Trammell. But why would you use your real passport to get an airline ticket?
Yeah.
And then a false one. I guess maybe he saw the Interpol notice.
Maybe so.
Maybe. He had contacts in Paris from a previous visit in 2010, and police were following a large frame man who had been in contact with Luca. Another man he stayed with for two nights did not realize who he was until he left. He boarded a Eurolines bus at the Bagnolet coach station bound for Berlin, Germany.
Huh.
Yep. Luca's obsession with himself is what actually got him nabbed. On June 4th, 2012, Luca was apprehended by Berlin police at an internet cafe in the Neukölln district while searching and reading news stories about himself.
Oh my gosh.
Initially, he tried giving fake names before admitting who he was, and his identity was confirmed through fingerprint evidence.
I hope they held a picture up next to him, like, look, dumbass, you're the exact same person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Luca Magnotta appeared in a Berlin court on June 5th, 2012, and according to German officials, he did not oppose his extradition. Really? You want to go back to Canada? You don't? You sure you don't want to go to jail in Germany?
Yeah. Germany seems like such a better place.
Canada, please.
They shouldn't even give them the option.
They probably serve beer in German prisons. I don't know. Especially around Oktoberfest.
Wonder if they do like the Angola prison here. They can do arts and crafts.
Arts and crafts and everything. Do all the things.
I want to do all the things.
And I think there should be nothing for them to do.
I'm going
to
sell these for cigarettes.
Sit in a cell and think about everything that you've done. There shouldn't be computers or iPads.
Cell phones.
Or nothing. Nothing.
They should make the whole prison watch his reality show. Over and over.
And over.
Just until it drives them insane.
Yes. Oh. Creep.
It's the only channel you can watch.
Okay. According to German officials, he did not oppose his extradition. There was sufficient evidence to keep him in custody until extradition, and he agreed to a simplified process. So he was like, yeah, I guess so. I'm caught.
I'm so easy. I've been nabbed. Been nabbed. The old mobster out.
Right? Also, on June 5th, 2012, a package containing a right foot was delivered to St. George's School, and another package containing a right hand to False Creek Elementary School in Vancouver. Gosh. It was confirmed that both packages were sent from Montreal. Some of the packages were wrapped in pink tissue paper. One of them was labeled with a note saying, "Roses are red, violets are blue. The police will need dental records to identify you, bitch."
Like, I have an ID. Really? They're not going to need to identify me.
Really?
He's so poetic. He's very creative.
He's so deep.
So deep.
Don't look the reflection.
Don't look in the mirror.
Don't look in the mirror.
But I'm always looking in the mirror.
I can't help it.
I love it.
Because I love my reflection.
Vladimir.
Yeah. On June 13th, 2012, the four limbs and the torso were matched to Lynn using DNA samples from his family. On July 1st, his head was recovered at the edge of a small lake in Montreal's and Grignan Park after police received an anonymous tip. Luca was accused of first-degree murder, committing an indignity to a dead body, publishing obscene material, mailing obscene, indecent, immoral, or scurrilous material, and criminally harassing Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper and several other members of Parliament.
Do you think he was the anonymous tipster?
Maybe. Yeah, I think so. I think they suspect himself. That. Yeah.
Like, I want to be on your mind forever.
On June 18th, 2012, he was delivered to Canadian authorities in Berlin and flown to Mirabel International Airport north of Montreal. A military transport was reported by the government to be necessary due to safety concerns with using a commercial flight and potential legal difficulties if the plane were diverted to another country. He was placed in solitary confinement at the Rivière de Paris Detention Center.
Sounds so fancy.
Right? Of course he wanted to go back to Canada. He's at the Riviera.
I want to be in the Riviera.
The crime was widely reported in China, with some believing that the murder was racially motivated. Some Chinese questioned public safety in Canada, as the killing was the second high-profile murder of a Chinese student there in slightly over a year.
Yeah, I could see why they were thinking that.
Yeah. So the foreign minister hurried up and hopped on the phone, called the Chinese ambassador to convey his condolences. Two days later, Lynn's family arrived at Trudeau Airport in Montreal. The Chinese Students and Scholars Association of Concordia University established a fund to defray expenses incurred by Lynn's family while in Canada. And an award was created in his honor. Yeah, candlelight vigil was held in Montreal.
They better take care of that family.
Yeah.
It's the least y'all can do.
Lynn's body was cremated on July 11th, and his ashes were buried on July the 26th at Notre Dame de Neiges Cemetery. His gravesite ID is K04166 in Montreal, if you're ever there. And you just want to go and say a little prayer over Lynn. Or you just want to go...
Bring him some flowers.
Bring him some flowers. Poor baby. On July 16th, 2013, Edmonton police charged BestScore.com owner Mark Merrick with corrupting public morals a rarely used obscenity charge for hosting the One Lunatic, One Ice Pick video online, which he pleaded guilty to on January 25th, 2016. So like 3.5 years later.
Did they tell him to do better? You're guilty. Do better. That's your sentence.
Do better. Merrick was sentenced to a 6-month conditional sentence. What does that even mean, conditional?
I don't know.
They use that a lot over in Canada.
Like, it may be 6 months?
He served half of the 6-month sentence under house arrest. Wowzers. Not like he didn't have access to the internet in prison or at home. So I'm sure he's running his business while on the inside. Of course, Luca pleaded not guilty to all charges. After he wanted a simplified process and all this other stuff, then he's like, I'm not guilty.
Just kidding. I didn't do any of this. I just wanted a free flight home.
Yeah. But his defense team requested that the media and public be barred entirely from the hearing. And I'm thinking, I know that wasn't a Luca request.
No, he would probably, he'd be pissed if he knew
wanted social media and the media and everybody to actually be there.
And make sure they're all on the right. My right side is my better side.
That's right. Of course, that was declined. So it didn't even matter.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that Luca was thrilled over that. Jun Lin's father traveled from China to attend the hearing. And on March 13th, one of Luca's lawyers actually resigned due to a possible conflict of interest. Expert witnesses testified, including a forensic pathologist, a forensic toxicologist, a forensic odontologist, a bloodstain analyst, data recovery specialist, and an internet investigations officer. So all of these pathologists and analysts and specialists and everything, I mean, can you imagine being Zhen Lin's father? He actually collapsed at several times during the proceedings.
Oh, I bet so.
Yeah.
I mean,
you
got to
hear all this stuff about your son and all the details and the
video and
no
specialist explaining it into detail. Mm-mm.
Right.
Like, jackass couldn't have just pled guilty and saved the family.
Exactly. Bastard. On April the 12th, 2013, Luca McNotta was indicted on charges of first-degree murder, offering indignities to a human body, distributing obscene materials, using the postal service to distribute obscene materials, and criminal harassment. McNotta elected to be tried by judge and jury, pleaded not guilty, admitting to the acts of which he was accused, but claiming diminished responsibility due to mental disorders. Crown attorney Louis Beauthillier, sorry if I slayed that. Oh, slayed means rocked it.
Yeah.
So, sorry if I butchered that, but... made his opening statement on September 29th, 2014. Quebec Superior Court Justice Guy Cornier presided over the trial, and it lasted 10 weeks.
Dang, that's a long trial.
Mm-hmm. Long trial.
I bet he loved every minute of it.
6 tools, a pair of scissors, 2 knives, a screwdriver, an oscillating saw, and a hammer were recovered outside Magnata's apartment analyzed by ballistics expert Gilbert Desjardins. He said none could definitively be linked to the killing and that no skeletal marks suggested the screwdriver or scissors were used, but some were consistent with saw and blade or exacto blade injuries. So I guess like with all the tools that they had,
yeah,
none of them could really be used or whatever to say, just, yeah, this is exactly yeah,
like
what
this
he
is
used.
Exactly what he used.
During the trial, Luca's defense attorney argued that Luca was in a psychotic state at the time of the crimes and could not be held responsible for his actions.
Well, the next psychotic state he's in, can he spend the night with you?
Mm-hmm. The Crown prosecutor argued that the murder of Zhen Lin was organized and premeditated and that Luca Magnotta was purposeful, mindful, ultra-organized, and ultimately responsible for his actions.
Yeah, I mean, he did it to 2 different people. He just didn't kill the first one.
Mm-hmm. So Luca had told a psychiatrist who interviewed him about the night that he killed Lynn that a person named Manny, who he said was an abusive client from his escort service, was there urging him to kill. It was then determined that this name and Luca's Trammell, like Kirk Trammell,
mm-hmm.
alias were inspired by Sharon Stone's fictional character, Catherine Tramell, and fiancé Manny Vasquez, both from the film Basic Instinct. Prosecutors also suggested that the black screwdriver used by Luca to stab Lynn had been painted silver to resemble the ice pick used in Basic Instinct's murder scenes.
So he didn't even have an ice pick.
He had a screwdriver and painted it silver.
That like is crazy. Like, what would make you think to do that?
I don't know. So he decided not to testify during his trial.
That's surprising.
Yeah.
You'd think he'd like to hear himself talk.
Yeah, right.
Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he just likes to look at himself.
He likes the reflection in the mirror.
And mm-hmm. he just keeps on staring.
So with all the disorders that all these different psychiatrists have labeled him as paranoid schizophrenia, histrionic personality disorder, borderline personality traits, paraphilia, which is recurring or intense sexual arousal to atypical objects, places, situations, fantasies, things like that. The majority lean towards the histrionic disorder, antisocial, narcissistic personality disorders, things like that. So he's got all the things.
He's got a long list.
Got a long, long list. A jury of 8 women and 4 men deliberated for 8 days. 8 days. Why the hell would it take you that long? I don't even understand.
Yeah. 8 minutes. Guilty.
Yeah. They returned a verdict of guilty on all charges. And Luca Magnotta will serve a mandatory life sentence and will be eligible for parole after 25 years.
What?
He was also sentenced to 19 years for other charges to be served concurrently. Meaning, while he's serving his 25 years, he's also serving his 19 years.
That's bullshit.
That is bullshit. And of course, he filed an appeal for the convictions to be annulled. And,
of course he did.
The appeal claims that the verdicts were unreasonable and unsupported by the evidence and the instructions. But he did withdraw that in 2015.
Oh, that's good.
Uh-huh. That was so nice of him.
So thoughtful.
Like, put the family, put the poor Lynn's through another...
Another trial.
Another trial.
To deal with your dumbass.
The murder of Jen Lynn and its subsequent trial drew comparisons across North America to Mark Twitchell. Have you heard of him?
Mm-mm.
He was a convicted murderer inspired by Dexter. The series Dexter?
Yeah.
Who used social media in his crimes and to self-promote his work.
Like his work is in his murdering?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
His work. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Arthur Steve Lillibun, who wrote a book on the case, described a new trend in crime where social media allows killers to become more online broadcasters and have direct instant access to a global audience that they may crave.
That is crazy.
Yes. Yes, it is so crazy.
Yes.
So the tragedies of the Magnotta case are numerous. For all his preening, narcissism, and sadistic self-importance, he was clearly a man racked with mental illness whose repeated attempts to seek professional help failed to bring him back from the brink. And even more tragically, he had been on the radar as an animal killer long before he met Jen Lynn. As one of the online sleuths later said in an interview, recounting how she faced a brick wall when contacting Montreal police about the cat videos, "I'm told it's just cats. And I'm showing them that it's been proven that people who abuse animals can turn into serial killers," and they brushed her aside.
I bet Jean Lynn's family, like, that's got to really, like, this dude was already turned in well before he murdered their kid.
Absolutely. I'd be furious.
Oh, yeah.
So less than a year after Luca Magnotta was in prison, he anonymously sent letters to the Toronto Sun that he had signed up to an inmate dating website called Canadian Inmates Connect.
Oh, my God.
How is
gosh.
This even allowed?
Why?
Why are they allowed to have a life better than what they've had on the out? I mean,
gets free food. A bed.
Yeah.
Heat and cool.
Right.
Now he can date while he's doing nothing. He doesn't
Absolutely.
Have a job.
Get married, whatever.
Oh.
So he placed a personal ad for a Prince Charming romantic partner. The ad was removed a few weeks later due to the fact that he found what he was looking for.
He removed it because he found what he was looking for? I thought you were going to say, like, they made them remove it.
No.
Oh my gosh.
Canadian Inmates Connect. So he found his Prince Charming.
Like, look, I'm a murderer, but I am not a cheater. I've already met my love.
In 2018, Magnotta shared his life on the inside with Brian Whitney via the Toronto Sun. Whitney wrote a book along with Luca's mother as co-author, My Son, the Killer. Well, congratulations, Mom.
Woohoo, great work,
Bet
Mom.
You're so proud.
You're a great role model.
In the book, Luca admits to spending the majority of his time in jail playing video games. He also states that it's very annoying. I never wanted anything to do with the NCR, not criminally responsible. defense. Like, he didn't want to use that. Okay, that's what he's saying. But his attorneys...
They made me.
I have no mental illness whatsoever. I had to go with it. Even though I didn't want to, but my lawyers, like, pressured me into it.
That's, like, terrible.
So bad.
I can't believe they did that to you. Poor baby.
In 2022, Luca Magnotta was transferred to the medium security facility, La Mikasa Institution, where he will remain until he is eligible for parole June 4th, 2034, and full parole June 4th, 2037. No.
It didn't even take him a decade to move him from high security to medium security.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
I cannot even. So that's the ludicrous story about Luca Magnotta.
I don't like him. I don't like him. This is a bummer.
I know. How gross. Now I feel dirty. I feel like a dirty, dirty girl.
You're so dirty.
I know. Well, so that's it. All right. So till we see you the next time with another crazy bitch who is unwell.
Bye.
We appreciate you listening to our podcast. If you liked it, please give us a good rating. You can listen on your favorite podcast platform with new releases every Friday. Just search for Bitch, I'm Not Well. Send us suggestions for an episode at b.tchimnotwell@gmail.com because Gmail won't let us use bitch. Or visit our website at www.bitchimnotwell.com. for more podcasts and our fabulous merchandise.
We'll see you next week on another podcast about another crazy bitch who is truly unwell.